Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It's Saturday, the 20th day of April.
Yeah. Furball?
That's the one.
Yeah. 2019. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news, and if you think I'm going to make a 420 joke, you are wrong.
Wrong.
But you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And happy Easter and happy Passover.
Yeah.
To everyone out there. Anyway, here's the news. Windows 10. Just made the most important change in its history, but rewriting rewriting the update rules matters for nothing if Microsoft has to keep apologizing for the quality of the updates themselves, and it has happened again. Just 1 week after freezing Windows 10 computers with an earlier update, Microsoft has warned users of serious new problems with another update, KB4493509. Microsoft has confirmed the update can freeze PCs both in operation and boot up. Freezes in operation are more likely to have an impact on business PCs as it affects cluster shared volumes, or CSVs, through the lockups, which may cause, this is my favorite part, which may cause the system to become unresponsive upon restart after installing this update.
Oops.
These are apparently caused by, and here's a surprise, conflicts with antivirus software.
What?
Microsoft calls out Arcabit, but a number of other brands seem to be affected too. The good news is things are about to change. Microsoft's aforementioned U-turn allows all versions, you're going to love this.
Okay.
Allows all versions of Windows 10 to delay both minor updates and major upgrades, when it will finally give users the control they deserve and enable them to proactively block buggy software. That said, these changes don't come in until May, and April is proving to be a particularly bad month for Windows 10. In fact, it's been a particularly bad 18 months for Windows 10, with even the company's most ardent supporters stating Microsoft has, and I quote, a software quality problem. Updates to Windows 10 alone caused serious problems for users in January, April, October, and November of 2018, as well as February of 2019, prior to the current awful April. And March wasn't any picnic either.
No month was.
So yes, Microsoft may at long last be redesigning Windows 10 updates in a more responsible manner. But allowing users to block dangerous updates is just one part of the solution. Not sending dangerous updates to users' computers every few months seems equally important to me. Now, we do have a poll of the week, but as you can see, the software has not yet updated. I keep doing the poll because hope springs eternal, but
that's right. It is springtime, after all.
It is springtime. However, you can join us in the forums. If you scroll down on the right, under Fascinating Stuff, you will see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one post is 20 April 19, another bad Win 10 update. So you can...
Well, at least they're getting that consistent.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's a certain amount of consistency here.
They're doing very good at screwing up our computers.
Yep. And if you'd like to talk about that or anything else, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I am in the process of buying a new Windows computer for my wife.
Okay.
And
the old one is no longer?
Well, it was a MacBook Pro.
Okay.
And it is dead. It is entirely dead.
Quite dead.
Yes. I've tried cajoling it. I've tried sweet-talking it.
Yes.
I've tried fixing it. I've tried beating it with a baseball bat.
Tried shaking your fist at it?
Shaking my fist at it. Saying words that I shouldn't say. I tried to, I think the drop test is what happened to it.
No, I'll never forget.
The patented Francesco drop test.
Yeah. I'll never forget that caller. When you told him, pick it up about 6 inches.
Oh, yeah.
This is when we were... Yo, this is when we were back over on another station.
Yep.
And a caller called in, and he was having trouble with his Mac.
Apple III.
Yep.
Okay.
And Nick told him, all right, pick it up 6 inches.
Pick up the front end about 6 inches.
And right. He goes, all right. He goes, okay.
Got it.
The guy goes, Nick goes, let it go. There's a hesitate.
Yeah.
The guy goes, he goes, what? Nick says, let it go. Are you sure you want me to let it go? Boom.
Fud.
He says, right up.
Now start it up. It started up. I'll never forget
it. What happened was,
welcome.
This is back in the days when RAM chips were socketed.
Yes. Yeah.
Apple IIIs, they used cheap sockets, and the chips would walk in transit.
Okay.
They would walk out of the
socket.
Not enough to... like be rattling around inside the case.
But just enough to lose contact.
Yeah.
And not boot.
And if you drop the front end about 6 inches, that's where the chips were.
Right.
It had set them back down again.
But that was so hilarious to hear that guy's dead silence when Nick told him, now drop it. Huh? Yeah. Drop it.
Drop it. Let go.
You want me to let go? Drop it.
Yep.
Oh, that was great.
All right, to the phones. The first caller we're going to tell to drop it is Mike from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Mike. What's up?
How you doing, Nick?
Peachy, how are you?
I've been better. I've been worse, as they say. Holiday weekend anyway.
Yep.
I have an LG phone that there was a program called Knock Knock to secure the phone. I've got hackers in my building. I live in a big apartment building. And so I put that on there. To make a long story short, they are smart enough to hack into it. So when you knock to try to, you know, follow the pattern that you thought you had, they just added another knock or two or whatever, and I cannot open the phone. And I wanted to know, other than bringing it to someone, or even if that's possible, I don't want to lose all that information that's on the phone. I've been out of commission with that for months. Knock-knock. I pulled all these programs down on my tablet, and it's a two-part question, hopefully. I also have a tablet, if I may, while you're thinking on that.
Yeah.
And these people above me are capable of shutting my tablet off, you know, in the middle of doing something, and restarting it constantly. It's quite amazing. And, you know, so I'm not even on the Internet. Do you follow?
Well, that's a little weird. Okay,
it's an RCA. It's an inexpensive tablet.
Yeah.
I'm calling it a tablet with a keyboard. And it's insane lately that they've been able to, they keep restarting the tablet.
All right, let's start with the tablet since that's still working.
Okay.
What you need to do is to, is it an Android tablet?
Yes.
Okay. What you need to do is wipe it out. And essentially restart it.
Wipe it out. What's
yeah,
that mean?
Yeah. Well, there's in the settings.
Yep.
You can
factory restart
it's,
it.
Yeah, it's a factory reset.
That'll wipe everything off the tablet, right?
Right. So before you do that, save off everything you want.
Yeah.
But if it is an Android tablet, it depends on what you have on it. You should certainly save the pictures.
Well, I have no pictures. All the software, all of the apps, I don't have anything to save it to, the tablet.
All right. Apps should not be a problem. Now, I don't know this particular brand, but Android, generally speaking, is Android. So what happens is when you log back in, it will say, do you want to restore all your old apps?
Log back in. I don't even have any logging on this because of these hackers. I just turn it on. You with me? I don't have go to whatever. I can't think of straight here, but I just turn the thing on.
Yeah, right. But see, if you reset it back to factory settings,
okay,
you're going to wind up with a log on back on.
Right. What kind of logon would there be if I never set one up?
Well, you if it's an Android tablet, and again, I don't know what kind of tablet it is, but it's an
RCA,
Android.
LG, Atlas, aggravating. Atlas something or other.
Okay.
Atlas. Yeah, it's an RCA Atlas. I can't think of the number.
All right, I'm just looking that up. It's that 2-in-1 with a separate keyboard.
Correct.
Thing.
Removable keyboard.
Yeah. All right, I'm just looking to see if that is in fact. Yeah, it's a standard Google tablet. So
okay. What
you had on there at one point when you first set it up?
I had a Google login.
Right.
Yeah, I do have that.
Right, and so when you logged in, you set it so that you didn't have to log in again, which is fine.
Yeah.
But you do have a Google login so that when you open up Gmail, it automatically knows your Gmail is there.
Right.
Right. So what you do is you would want to go into settings and do a factory reset.
Factory reset, okay.
And then when you start it up again, it's like the brand new tablet. So you go through all the setup stuff. It leads you through that, if you remember.
I don't, but go ahead. I'm going
to learn. And one of the things that it asks you for is your Gmail username and password.
Okay.
You enter that, and it should come back and say, oh, do you want to restore everything? And
okay. You
say yes, and it'll bring back everything that you had on that machine.
Good.
And I would suggest going through and changing all the passwords.
Yeah, change.
Yeah, I don't have any other I just have a Google. I don't have any passwords in this thing. I don't have any information that's useful. They're just, what do you want to call them, nuisances, loons? I don't have the right term.
Right.
Whatever it is, they're extremely aggravating, and they've been stopped. I had Spectrum come over here and change the password on my router. What's the other word? Router modem. And the guy shows up with old separate router modems. I said, are we going backwards here? You know, I have a unit with both in one thing. And so, to make a long story short, the guy turns around, he puts this goofy change in my router. The people in 10 minutes knocked my. I had to re-enter my password, so they know the password already on that. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the LG with the knock-knock, that phone, I don't want to lose all the stuff that's on that. I looked at Unlock, you know, various programs that I had. I can no longer get on the tablet. Hopefully your answer will work for me with the settings. Reset, I'm hoping. And then that, though, is baffling that they changed my knock-knock. And or I was 3 a.m, I inadvertently knocked one time too many or something. I don't even remember that being on the phone. I wondered if they had added that on there for some dope like me to try it. Because I've tried, you know, any other things, they're always able to get on my stuff. They're keyloggers and whatever other terminology that
right.
I don't have at hand at the moment.
What may well have happened, and really I think you're at the point where you need to take this to somebody, because they may have added a piece of software to your phone.
I see.
Which is then reporting to them everything you do.
Yep.
I see. Well, the knock-knock aspect, do you know how to get around, in other words, to open that up or unlock that with this bypass of the knock-knock or use of it or something?
I haven't.
LG?
I haven't used knock-knock myself, to be honest with you.
Because of the reason I'm saying, if you inadvertently, you know, then it has, I'm at the point where now it says, okay, you've tried to unlock it 252 times and it makes you wait. It has a timer waiter, you know, for whatever 252 half seconds equals, and then you're allowed to try again. but I'm sure, like, what they did, like I said, is they turned around, because I'd made it work once. I said, oh, this is great. And then I went to do it again, and then now I'm up to, like I said, 200. The phone's been sitting there for months, because I can't, every time I try, it just can't do it. Taking it to somebody, I mean, the people that are on your show, I require to do that, Is it? Can you do it through the mail? I'm a senior citizen that doesn't get around that well.
Yeah, no. You might look, call around. You may be able to get someone who comes to your home.
Uh-huh.
I know the Computer Wizard does that. I know that the Geek Squad does that.
Oh yeah, Computer Wizard.
Yeah,
Geek Wizard. I'm writing this down as fast as I can. And Geek Squad.
Yeah,
which is through Best Buy, right?
Right.
Okay.
I know that those folks come to your home there, and I would call some of the other vendors in town.
Your service provider of the phone.
Right.
LG?
Who's your
Who's your carrier?
Verizon or Sprint or...
Oh, I think it was Verizon.
Okay.
And then I also I had them switch it over to the SafeLink, and somehow that got messed up. That's my ultimate idea for my sister and I was, you know, to burn out the phone with what I purchased. It was inexpensive, and, you know, and it had a year's worth of features. And so then to go to SafeLink. But SafeLink won't help you do anything over the phone.
Right.
So Geek Squad, Computer Wizard, and what other vendor did Steve Ray, the other gentleman say?
Dave Enright was talking about, well, I was saying any of the local vendors that you'll find in the phone book.
I see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, I appreciate everything. I know you got other people coming on the line, and I hope I can get this knock-knock thing, because that phone I really want to have up and running. And I really appreciate you telling me what to do with the tablet. So thanks, and have a great holiday, folks.
You too. Thanks. You too.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, the problem, of course, is that there are any number of programs called Knock Knock, so I don't know which one he had. But basically, if someone's broken into your computer, this is why, you know, guns are harder to get than we think. But in general, the reality is that resetting the phone is what you need to do, and in the case where it is that deeply locked up, you may need to take it back to the company that the phone company, Verizon or whoever who sold it to you, the carrier. Thank you,
right.
Who sold it to you, so that they can do that, because that's how that would work, and that Atlas 10-inch 2-in-1 tablet, as long as it still actually boots up, then I would suggest that you can do a reset on that one at least. And then maybe the first program you should put on it is a program like Lookout or one of the other antivirus programs that is available for Android. There are a number of Android...
That's good to know.
Yeah. antivirus and anti-malware programs. For example, Malwarebytes is available for Android. And that works actually, of course, really well, as we know. So that might be a good one. That might be a good one to try. Add Malwarebytes on your Android phone.
Sure.
And that can help at least...
Help identify if something may be on there that you don't prefer to be on there. Potentially unwanted programs.
And that can be put PUPs.
Yes.
Potentially unwanted programs.
Right.
And that would also go right on both the tablet and the phone when it gets that fixed. So.
Cool.
Look, we've said this for decades. A bunch of 10-year-old kids who have not been able to
stumbled upon some tool that they think will make them powerful.
And they have more
excitement than sense.
They're not old enough to go out with girls, so that they do this instead. Or to go to prison, so they do this instead. I get it. Fine. But
I got some new toys at my house, Nick.
What'd you get?
I got a it's the kind of thing I've been looking for a while, but I didn't quite have the intestinal fortitude to lay out the big cash, so I went and bought a refurbed unit that has been working just fine. It's a set of Philips Hue lights and an adapter so that I can have my Lady in the Tube We call her Alaska at my house,
right,
so that when we say her real name, she doesn't perk up and say, what do you need? What? Right. No, I'm listening. It's okay.
It's the Amazon Echo lady,
yes,
Alaska.
The nice lady in the hockey puck that lives at my house.
She's a little tiny lady.
She answers all of my questions. She's up at all hours of the night and can answer anything
just
I need.
Just waiting for your questions.
So now I've trained Alaska to turn on lights and turn off lights and to set lights at different levels. And that's kind of been sort of fun. I've found a refurb set of four lights and a bridge unit. And the bridge unit talks to all the light bulbs. And when I ask Alaska to turn on the TV room lights to 50%, they just magically ramp up to 50%.
Nice.
It's a bit like having a genie in your house, and you make your wishes, and then they keep happening. So it's kind of fun. So I'm trying to figure out, I've had those for about a week or so, and I'm trying to figure out, okay, this is kind of neat. What else can I do? What's next?
And this should replace all the old timers we used to put on our lights to have them go on and off when
right.
we're on vacation.
On vacation, yes. Right. And they make things that you can plug into the wall that will happily listen to your bridge, so that if you want to, for instance, turn on your Christmas lights on your Christmas tree, you can do that with your voice. Or if you want to, it's really good for things that might otherwise not have a light switch, or you might have a pull string on them, or things that are hard to reach or hard to get to.
Right.
And I'm looking for ideas about what to try next. And I don't have a good sense of this. So,
and of course, you can have your radio turn on every Saturday at noon.
Yes. Well, but to what station?
Well, Jazz 90.1.
Oh,
what other stations are there?
Of course.
Yes. Of course. Actually, we have a lot of people listen over the stream.
Sure.
Again, Steve Ray, sorry, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest.
Yep.
And so he has no signal out there among the Box Canyons and Mesas and Wadis, and so he has no, we don't have the
He was wearing
YouTube
the sombrero up. And the fake mustache last week. I believe he's gone to dreadlocks this week.
I believe so.
He's trying to, you know, if there are any members of law enforcement listening, that is definitely not what he is wearing.
No, no. But, besides which, nobody wants to see Steve Ray in dreadlocks. Trust me on this. It's
burn
not
your
a,
eyes.
It's not a thing.
Oh,
not a thing. But so yeah, if you have at Christmas your porch lights.
Uh huh. Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Or your whatever things you want to put out in your front yard.
Right.
Decorations that might need lights.
We have a string of lights that lasts all year long in the backyard for the fairy tree.
Okay.
So when we're standing at the sink, we can look out at night and see the fairy tree lit up.
That's very nice.
That's very nice. And right now, that particular socket is burned out, so I could replace it with one of these. And it
would
light up every night at the right time and turn off every day at the right time. It's the timer. The timer is dead.
Right.
So I could replace it with one of these bridge things.
Yeah, that would work.
That would work.
So the other thing I learned is that there are lots of other devices that you can connect to this flavor of automation. And it's not like the old X10 days where you have to plug things into your outlets and then run wires in between everything.
I remember the X10s.
Technically it works, but it's it's another layer of infrastructure on top of your house. And now everything's kind of wireless, and for the most part it just works, and I'm pretty impressed by it. So I'm trying to see what would happen next. The one thing I'm thinking about is they've got this thing called a Bluetooth beacon that you can put on your keychain. And, for instance, when you come home, your home recognizes that your Bluetooth beacon has come into range and it has appeared in its field of view. And then it can use that as a trigger to do things like turn on certain lights. And I want to learn more. So if you've got an automated home, please call and tell me what you're doing with it so that I can get some ideas.
That's 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. While you're making that call, we're going to take a quick break. We'll back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 29 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Andy from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, guys. Happy Easter Bell.
You too.
And I got a question. My laser printer has this nasty habit of going offline.
Okay, let me guess. Wireless laser printer?
No, it's wired through my router.
Oh, okay.
With a fixed IP.
Mm-hmm.
And about 3-4 weeks ago, it just arbitrarily, you go to log in or go to print something, and it says printer's offline. And you click on the printer. So I went down to the Windows box, turned it on, brought it up, and looked at it, and it says it's offline. What I wound up, after a lot of different trial and error, is I actually power cycle the LaserJet, then run the Windows troubleshooter, and all of a sudden it goes back online for 3-4 days, and then all of a sudden it's offline again. And I'm wondering, did Windows do something, or...
When it goes offline, is it offline for every machine or just the main Windows machine?
It's offline for every... The reason I found out, I tried to print something from the Chromebook, and it said printer's offline.
Right.
I went down and looked at it, and I'm thinking, okay, maybe it's out of paper, it's jammed. Printer was just fine. Brought up the Windows box and said it's offline. So after playing around, I power cycled the printer. Because the thing is, I switched to the LaserJet, which is my... more expensive, but second printer, and it printed just fine. So it's taking off the primary printer or default printer and dropping it to offline mode, and I don't know why. Because the printer's working just fine.
The next time it goes offline in Windows, you can open, what do they call that, hyperterminal?
Yeah.
Or not hyperterminal, the command prompt.
The command prompt.
And you can run a tool called Ping, which is a lot like a sonar in a submarine. Its job is to send out a very small message to a particular recipient and get a response. And you can attempt when the printer is, air quotes, broken, to ping it and see if it responds. That will tell you if it's even listening to anything on the network and be able to respond, or if it's something within Windows itself. That might give you some more clues to work with.
You also, by the way, can, from your browser... connect to the printer, and it should, because the printer has a little web server in it.
Right.
And you if it's still connected to the network, you should be able to connect with it that way. In fact, connect while it's obviously still working, and then bookmark that, and then you can go back to it. And there's a lot of useful information there, but the most useful thing for you is if it goes offline, you'll know whether it's actually disconnected from the network or it's just not responding to print requests.
Right.
Which is two different problems.
Right. Mm-hmm. That might give you some more clues, give you another handhold to try and figure out what the next step in the troubleshooting might be.
Mm-hmm. So by being able to ping it and see what it thinks it's doing, then I can figure out hopefully whether it's something with the router or something. Although I'm doubting it's the router because I can switch printers to the LaserJet, and it prints just fine.
Right.
What I have...
And I'm still connected to my backup drive. I can all my mappings stay. So if it's the router, I'd lose a lot of that other stuff.
Right. One thing that did happen to me at work this week is I had a printer that's been in place for probably 5 years, and it's been absolutely rock solid. And the person who sits next to it called me and said, the printer is down, and it's not doing what it needs to do. And I said, okay, I'll be up. I'll check it out. Went up to check it out, took a look at the lights. This is a enterprise level one, so it's got lights next to the network jack for link and for activity. And the lights were blinking, but they were blinking very, very intermittently. And they would come on and blink, 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 and then they'd shut off for 4 or 5 seconds and then come back on. And what we ended up doing was swapping out the cable between the wall and the printer, and that brought it right back. don't look too far before you check all the fundamentals of making sure that your physical layer stuff is all playing nicely.
Troubleshooting thing one is always check the cable.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's also the cheapest thing to fix in terms of time and in terms of dollars, too.
Yeah. So definitely check that. The other thing is, you say it happens intermittently, but if one of the things that is possible is if you have set in the router a static address on the printer, but did not set the same static address in the printer itself, the printer may be looking for a lease renewal that is simply not available because the router thinks it's a static address. And that would happen every 4 hours, every 2 hours, every 1 hour, depending on when was the last time you used it.
Hmm.
Yep, that's okay. Another thing to keep in mind.
And I will check that. But this printer's been set up with this address for several years.
No, yes, and I do understand
this
that.
The online thing just started happening within the last month.
Yeah, right. I would try the I would start with the cable, make mm-hmm. sure that that's
the nice. Cheapest thing to do.
It's then, also if the cable is fine and the static or dynamic addresses are fine and everything else is fine, it may just be old.
It's possible.
And if the wired connection is not healthy. Does this printer also do wireless?
No.
Okay.
It's old enough not that it doesn't do wireless?
Right.
Well, I purposely bought a duplex and network printer, and it didn't have the wireless version of it was more expensive, and I knew I wasn't going to hook it up wirelessly.
Right.
So I didn't spend the money. I bought the one that did what I wanted it to do because okay. I had no intention of running it wirelessly.
Right. But you're saying if you reset it up in Windows without touching the printer at all, it works?
No. I tried running the troubleshooter at first, and it wouldn't do anything.
Ah.
But I sat there and I went, all right, think about this. And there was smoke coming out. The gears were burning. But I went over and flipped the printer off. And I said, before I kill the network, because I know the network's okay because I can get to the laser,
sure.
or to the inkjet. So I went over and I flipped the laser off and waited 15, 20 seconds, brought it back up. And just to see if that would do anything. And then I ran the it didn't change the offline status, but I ran the troubleshooter again. And lo and behold, after, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds of the troubleshooter running, all of a sudden it went, bink, I'm lying.
Yeah, so what it sounds like is...
I don't print that often, so I don't know how long it's going to revert to the offline thing, but it's like when I go to print every 4 or 5 days or something like that, I go in and sometimes it works and sometimes it's offline again.
Right. Hmm. Well, it sounds like an intermittent problem with the network card. It may be overheating, and that's why turning it off and waiting 20 or 30 seconds and turning it on again... eventually let it reset.
Yep, you might want to check and see if there's a firmware update for the printer, too, from the manufacturer.
Right.
Many times, especially if the network ports are integrated into the main circuit board for the printer, a update to the firmware can change the way that behaves and sometimes increase the reliability. I know on the printer I have at home, I've been through several firmware updates, and it's only with the last one or two that I feel like it's really been sufficiently stable to be trustworthy. So that may be another thing to investigate. So I think between the physical error stuff with the cable, once you've got cable that you think you can trust, getting a nice solid ping, and then making sure that the firmware is up to date, those are definitely three things you can try to try and improve the intermittent situation that you find yourself in.
Particularly if this printer is several years old and you've never done an update on the firmware. Give that stuff a try.
It's a Samsung printer, but now Samsung sold its printer division to HP, so we're going to...
Yep, yeah, you can Google for firmware.
Firmware updates, but...
Yep.
Well, and again, if you connect to it via the browser, you should be able to get to a page that, once you've logged in as the admin, you should be able to get to a page that lets you do firmware updates.
Many of them will have a button within that browser, that what I'll call web administration tool, that will let you either link directly to fetch firmware updates, or that will let you jump back to the manufacturer's page to get those.
Right, Andy, we got to move on.
Nope, I thank you very much for all your suggestions, and we'll plot our way through those and see what happens.
Cool,
perfect, thanks.
Good luck. Yeah, printer issues are. Where I work, it either seems to be printing or email. You know, it's one of the two.
Oh,
whenever the phone rings, you can guess that it's going to be one of those two.
And if it's email, if the email server goes down, you know it within 8 seconds.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
And even when it's not down, people will call you and ask, rather than state what their problem is, they'll just say, is the email server down? You know, they've already figured it out in their head what the symptoms are and what the solution is and clearly what must be wrong.
Right. We one time before we get back to the phones, one time when I was working at RIT in the help desk section for the entire university institute at the time, the email server for the entire thing went down. And the phones just started ringing off the hook.
Like Christmas and of course,
everybody
lights.
Else, yeah. And of course, everybody else is like, hi, thank you for calling the RIT help desk. This is blah, blah, blah. How may I help you? Mm-hmm. Waiting for them to say the person. I started picking up the phone and saying, yep. Very quickly, I pick up the phone and say, yep, email's offline. Nope, we don't know when it'll be fixed. Yep, we'll let you know as soon as we do. Anything else? No, that's it. Thanks. Bye. Boom. Yep. The email's offline. Nope. We don't know when.
That's right. You got to roll those calls.
Like five times as many calls as everybody else.
Your
stats. They don't need polite. Just, they need to get their, you know,
just a quick answer.
They need a quick answer.
They don't need
that
a
point.
Dissertation.
Right. Okay. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. What's up, Mike?
I just wanted to get your opinion on app lock as a safety feature versus, say, LastPass. I don't know if you're familiar with app lock. I just found out about it the other day. It's sort of like an overlay, and you draw a unique pattern. There's three dots. Let's see. Then there's a column, I think, three high. So if my math is correct, it's, what, 4 × 4, whatever.
Yeah,
but I didn't know if, say, for example, and you can put all the settings on it. You go into settings, and this thing comes up as a blocking mechanism, and you have to know the pattern that's unique to you, and then it opens it up.
Yep.
I didn't know if that protected everything, including, you know, a lot of stuff. Or is LastPass better? What do you think?
Well, LastPass doesn't do the same thing.
We're talking about apples and oranges here.
Right.
They're not exactly the same.
LastPass is something that keeps track of all your passwords.
Right. But, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't put it in context. If I go to the memo file and put all my passwords there and then put app lock over the whole thing, settings or whatever, you think that would be as good as LastPass or no?
Well, no. And here's why. LastPass encrypts all your information. The memo pad does not. Even with app lock over it, it does not. Now, we had another Mike earlier from Rochester, New York, and somebody broke into his phone. They would be able to read the data from inside the phone. App lock doesn't work.
Right?
Because you're already inside the phone.
Right. Yeah.
So they would be able to read the data in the memo program.
That's what we call clear text. It is as your eyes would read it.
Right. And whereas LastPass, even if they got inside his phone, it would still be an encrypted file.
Good point. Never thought about it. Well, that's why I call. Okay,
there you go.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's true. And I think one of the other things he was talking about was the different forms of authentication that there are these days. Your phone needs to know that you are you. It doesn't have, you know, eyes or ears and can't really identify, well, pardon me. Of course, these days with facial identification, maybe I speak too quickly.
Mm.
But, you know, in the old days, it was a PIN. It was 4 digits that you typed in, and then they extended that to longer, 6 and 8 digits, and then they added the ability for that to be a string of letters and numbers and other characters. Then they turned it into, here's a set of dots. Connect these dots in the right pattern. Or
right,
let
and
me
that
take-
on Windows... touchscreen machine, you can have a picture of something and how you touch the picture.
Oh, okay. That's
matters.
For me.
So, for example, the one they show is a cat and the kid taps each eye and then makes a smile.
Okay.
And that opens up the...
That's interesting.
The
that's
thing.
New to
yeah.
me.
Yeah, that's new.
So then it was fingerprints and now it's facial ID.
Where now it's facial ID.
It's taking a picture of your face and comparing... You know, how far apart your eyes are and
right.
you know, how wide your nose is. And
the problem is all of these are bypassable in some way or another.
Oh, yeah.
The one that I used to
There's
use.
No, nothing perfect.
For my Chromebook.
Okay.
But it seems to be broken at the moment and has been for about a year, is that it would connect to my phone. And if my phone was unlocked.
Yeah.
Then it would be unlocked.
Oh, okay.
My phone unlocks... In one of two circumstances, A, when I'm on my home network,
right,
or B, when it's close to my watch.
Okay, in proximity
of my watch. So if you were to steal my phone and walk away from me, it would lock.
Right.
But while you're, and then you'd have to know my information. But if you're, if it's close to me, if it's on me, it's unlocked.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. And these days, like you said, not all of them are bypassable. But having a
but
layered,
you still gotta have something.
Well, a layered approach of more than one thing can make it difficult. It's more than one hoop to jump through.
Right.
You know, you think of the old. Do you remember Get Smart from the 60s?
Yep.
They do the promo every week where he's walking through all the different doors and scanning things. And, you know, you can tell he's headed to a very secret place because all these different doors have to open. And that's kind of how, you know, getting into your laptop or into your online services these days is these.
The onion model of security.
That's right.
Layer all, after layer after layer.
You have to jump through the following four layers in order to get to your stuff.
Right.
Which, when you're in a hurry, is a big pain in the butt. But,
you know, it's that it's a few seconds of pain. Versus good security, which do you want? You know,
it's a trade-off. You can figure out how secure do you feel comfortable being. What's worth the hassle to you?
Particularly, our phones nowadays have everything in them.
Oh yeah,
all the people. If I'm in your phone as a contact, you dang well better be locking that phone. I don't want everybody having my phone number.
Right. Right.
Right? So it's not just you, it's everybody in your contacts list and all the information you've got in your thing. And like Mike is doing, he's got all his passwords in a memo field. That's if anybody gets to his phone, they own all his passwords.
Right, right.
So you really want to use something that's much more secure and something like LastPass. So even if they, now there's that onion layer again. Even if they get to his phone.
They get to the phone. They're able to unlock it.
Right.
They still have to ask for some other flavor of password or some other flavor of authentication.
Right. Right. Now, I have my LastPass actually works in such a way that it connects up to a, and I'm not going to tell you where, but it connects to somewhere on the internet.
Elsewhere.
So that all my devices share the same database.
Right.
But that database is A, encrypted, B, encrypted as it travels,
so it's encrypted at rest. Here's the one I use. I use a tool called 1Password. I'm showing Nick my phone here, and it has a special button on the bottom of it that you can press, and it says, in order to unlock this, put your fingerprint on the reader, and then you can get to all the things.
Yep.
So that people who might take my phone and might be able to unlock it still can't get to that without lopping off my thumb first, or other finger.
Or other finger, whichever finger it might happen to
be. Someday I'll put my nose print in there, too, just in case.
Your dog's nose print.
Now you're talking.
Ooh. Now you're talking.
Yeah.
Dog's nose prints are apparently unique as well.
Okay, good to know.
Good to know.
I was not aware of that.
Of course, now you have to have your dog around all the time. But
yeah, what happens if
puppy... Who doesn't want their dog around all the
time? Yeah, but what happens if puppy runs away?
Well, that's a separate issue. Or if somebody steals your phone and your dog.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
That's
not good. Maybe the dog, maybe the puppy thing isn't.
Dog grabs the phone and goes buries it.
And of course, the problem with facial recognition is the police are using it now.
Oh, yeah.
Because all they have to do is hold your phone up to you and say, is this your phone? Oh, look, it's unlocked.
Oh, isn't that not convenient?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm not a... I think it's a cool technology. I think it's interesting that they can do it. I'm not sure that I'm completely on board with it yet, personally.
Right.
I think that unlocking a device should be a deliberate act, and I don't think simply holding something in front of your eyes such that your brain can recognize it should be enough for your phone to say, oh, clearly the intention was of the person standing in front of me that I am supposed to unlock when I see this particular face. Again, I would love to be able to add a second... factor there. Maybe a face plus something.
Right. Right. But yeah, so be very careful how you lock your phone, but please lock your phone.
Absolutely.
I understand there's that tiny little momentary bit where you have to actually unlock it, and oh, that's so inconvenient.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you've got an awful lot of data and information, personal information on your phone.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody in your contact list will appreciate it if everybody on Earth can get at all your contacts.
That's true.
You might be a little upset.
Not to mention your photos, your location information.
And just personal information.
That's right.
Or just don't put it in your phone. But good luck. Good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole point.
Everybody
it's supposed to be an assistant that lives in our pocket. And in order to do that well, it needs to know who you
are. Well, that's the one problem, though, and my wife and I were talking about it. Our society today, we've forgotten how to learn to talk to each other.
Boy, ain't that the truth.
We were out to dinner just a couple nights ago, and there's a family, a husband, wife, and two kids.
Okay.
They're all sitting around the table. Instead of sitting there, you know, asking, you know, how was your day? All four of them are down into their phones, sitting there typing away.
Mm. Yep.
And it's like, seriously?
You know, at
everywhere you go, everywhere's where I drive, all you see is at bus stops or anything else, people looking down at their phones.
When my daughter was younger and living at home, food would not come out to the table if there was a phone on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Unless you said, you know, I've got a friend who's traveling and they're going to, you know, whatever. Right. When my sister-in-law would come into Rochester, she set the standard for all of us. I'm at the airport. I'm in the plane. Mm-hmm. The plane has landed. I'm in my cab. I'll be there in an hour, whatever it happens to be, right? So that, for that, the phones would come out. Okay. Those are the sort of special circumstances. But otherwise, if there was a phone on the table, supper did not come out.
Okay.
My dad.
And if my daughter at one point reached for a phone during dinner, my wife and I both reached for a plate. Uh-oh. That's it. You're done eating.
My dad, because this is going back, you know, decades, if the phone rang, he'd go over, pick up the phone, say hello. Yes, she is. And then hang up. And inadvertently, say my sister Deb would sit there. Who was that for? Well, they asked if Deb was here, and I told them yes, and then I hung up.
Yep, it's supper time.
He says, we do not take calls during supper time. You tell everybody we do not take calls.
Right.
But, you know, no. It's house rule, and that's the way it was.
It's okay to set some boundaries.
Yep.
That's right. You always answer the phone because it could be an emergency.
True. Yep.
If it's not an emergency, we're done.
Yep.
We'll call you back.
But he was polite. He said, yes, she was, and then hang up.
Yeah, so he knew it wasn't an emergency.
Polite-ish, yeah.
And it's all good. All right, listen, that music tells us you've wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away.
There's even more nonsense coming.
There's even more nonsense coming with Dave Enright, with Dennis Worster, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And take a quick bio break, but come on back because there's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And we are truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Grease Rochester, a public service of the Grease Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon. Welcome back.
We're still here.
We're still here. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
Apparently, I don't know where I am or what time it is. It's 6 minutes after the hour.
Yes.
You're listening into the second hour of the longest running computer show of the known universe. That's right. It's still Sound Bites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Member Supported Jazz 90.1.
If you got another update.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Another update.
We're finally up to 58%.
58% of?
Last week we went from 54, and now this week we're up to 58 as far as green light.
Oh, nice.
Are you getting so close?
Yeah, you're getting closer.
What's the threshold that they would prefer you to have before they're very interested in talking with?
Well, I think, I don't know, I can't really speak to it, but I know for sure, but okay. I'm assuming because, well, they want, I think, as much as they can get. I don't know what the cutoff or all that is, but our area is pretty big, And we go from Empire Boulevard all the way over to Norton Street, all the way from Culver down to Hellendale. So that's quite a large area.
Yeah.
But I know all the shops along the front, Dan's Crafts and all other stores and everything else. I'm sure they would. I know the dentist right next to me, he wants it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for them to shoot a line straight up through our backyard would be no big deal.
Right.
To get on up into that area and then branch off if they want from there. So keep my fingers crossed. At least they're coming into our area.
Yeah.
Before, right. You know, I mean, they've got it across the street.
Right, right.
And it's ticking me off.
whoever it was who just called in, please call back. We'll pick up the phone this time.
We promise.
It's so frustrating to be that close.
Yeah. Boy. And it's down the hill. I go down into the Dugway. All those new apartment complexes that have only been there and just coming up on a year all have high speed.
Yep. Okay, grab that. We'll,
if it's still... Okay.
No, there we go.
Okay. One way or another, we'll make it happen.
Yes, it's ringing.
Oh, boy.
Having high-speed internet is becoming more and more important.
Yes, that's true.
To everybody. And, in fact, I know a couple of realtors who say that one of the things people are asking for now is high-speed internet.
Right. Yeah.
And high-speed is a relative term, of course, but most people are talking about fiber. Frankly,
mm-hmm.
They want consistently fast, super high speed stuff.
Well, that would certainly help narrow down if you're looking at, you know, a dozen different homes,
right?
And you need to help narrow that down, saying, all right, well, which one of these is high speed internet available,
right?
And that might narrow it down to four, and then that makes the decision making process a lot easier too,
right?
And if you have a house and you want to maintain its its desirability, and you want to increase your profit from when you go to sell your house. You want your value to increase. Having a home that has the ability to have high speed internet makes it more attractive to buyers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
so it's a great way to bump your sale price just by.
That's one of the ways we got green light in our neighborhood so quickly. Is I told people that, and I said, you know, even if you have to pay a couple of bucks to get on the list. And you're thinking of selling your home, you want to add $1,000 to the cost of your home for $5. How does that
That's not a good deal.
Well, they only
sense.
Charge you a penny. I mean, for me to
the
sign
penny.
Up, they wound up charging my bank account one penny.
Right.
And that's what I was...
And to increase the cost of your home by $1,000 or more for a penny?
Yeah.
Yes.
$5,000, easy.
And that's what I told my wife. She did up this email to our neighborhood group and told them, you know what? If nothing else... Think long term, because it'll cost you a whole penny to just say, yes, please bring it into the area. But if you go to sell your home, it's going to add a lot more value to it because you have the high speed. And let's face it, everybody's going to high speed. There, all the services and everything else out there right now, you know, are offering, you
particularly
know.
Particularly younger folks want cord cutting and that requires
the gaming and all this other stuff. People walk around their houses now with their laptops or their tablets.
Right.
And they're doing everything, streaming videos and everything else on their tablets so they can watch it, you know, wherever they are.
Yeah. Yep. We have an industry term for this. We call it a hygiene factor. We say, this is not the kind of thing that is a bonus. It's not a nice to have. This is the kind of thing that when people come in, they expect it. This is the washing your hands after you sneeze situation.
That's exactly right.
So
very good.
This is when you don't have it, people say, why don't you have this? What's wrong?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Greece, New York. Hi, Richard. What's up?
Hi, I've got a quick question. I get an email from a friend of mine who says she never sent it, and this has happened a couple of times, and it's basically selling stuff. Is my email hacked? Or?
No, nor is hers. Here's the deal.
Wait a minute. Are you on speakerphone?
Yes.
Please take it off.
It's very echoey. It's
okay.
Hard for us
much
to hear.
Much better. Thank you.
But at any rate, that's okay. But I get it. People want it, you know, you want your hands free while you're waiting to get on. But once you get on, the speakerphone should come off. Here's the deal. Email addresses are public. And they're also often easily guessed. Right? So, you know, not a big deal. So what happens is... They're also email addresses. Email was never designed to be secure. So it is very easy to spoof an email address. So, for example, with the right software, and trust me, that software is both free and available to anybody. With the right software, I can pretend to be Dave Enright and send out an email from whatever his email address is. I can pretend to be Dennis Worcester. Oh. I don't know why anyone would, but I could pretend.
Sometimes I don't even want to be Dennis Worcester. Right.
But I could send it out as if I were them. Now, if you do a dive into the data, what's called the metadata that comes along with the email, assuming your software lets you do that, you will see that it is in fact coming from somewhere else, often from somewhere else, and clearly did not come from your friend. But just, you know, they've set the address to be that your friend's address.
Okay.
And there's honestly nothing you can do about that except never, ever respond.
Okay. Well, I did open it up one time because I thought it was from her, but I didn't. It was selling something, and I never bought it or anything like that. It was just, I'm wondering, and I said, did you send me this email? And she said, no, and then I showed it to her. She said, I never sent it. So
right, right.
Yep, just throw it out.
And they're just picking random people and sending out emails as if they were that person.
Well, you made me feel much better, and thank you.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. I'm sorry it's happening, and there's honestly no way to fix it at this point, the way email actually runs. But it is what it is.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Have a happy Easter.
You too, Richard. Thanks. There are proposals to change the way email works, to make it much more secure, right. To verify each person as they send an email.
I feel like they've been talking about this for decades.
Yeah, but they'd be right, exactly. And that's the problem. Email is essentially the second oldest profession. Internet.
Pretty close, yeah.
For the oldest thing on the internet is TCP/IP. The second oldest thing is email.
That's right.
And consequently, changing it at this point is more than trivial, as they say. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Bob. What's up?
Oh, just a question about the discussion last hour about home automation, Alexa and her sisters and so forth.
Okay, tell us. What can you tell us?
How do you know that microphone is not live without the trigger word? How do you know that?
You don't.
The way that you would investigate that is you would do what's called a packet analysis on your network to see what information is flowing from one place to another.
But most people don't have the capability to run that.
They don't. And so the issue really becomes, how do you know that your smart speaker of whatever?
Yes.
And that includes, by the way, Siri and Bixby, as well as the Google Assistant and the and Alaska.
Yes, all the other
and all the other
machinery.
The answer
applies to all of them.
Right, and the answer is
just asking the question to make people think.
Right, the answer
you know
is
you know that microphone is not live.
You don't know that. The answer is you don't know that. Well, the answer, in fact, is that microphone is always live.
You assume that it is.
And, in fact, one of our stories...
Yes, because it has to hear the trigger word.
Right. No, you don't have to do the trigger word, because it's always listening for the trigger word.
Right. So the mic is always live.
So the mic is always live. So once we're done here, I'll read one of our news stories that talks about the fact that the microphone is always live and everybody's always listening.
Yep.
Just something I think people should be thinking about before they buy these things.
You're absolutely right, Bob. Absolutely right. Thanks for calling.
Have a good day.
You too. So I will read that now.
Okay.
If you own an Amazon Echo smart speaker, do you ever get the feeling that someone at Amazon is listening while you're speaking with your virtual assistant? In fact, there are times when someone at Amazon is indeed listening to recordings of your chats. The company has on its payroll a number of employees and consultants, by the way, who are paid not only to listen to recordings of your interactions with Alaska,
yes.
But also to write them down. There are thousands of employees worldwide given the task of transcribing these recordings, adding comments, and loading the information into a software program. This is done to help Alaska improve its outstanding Its understanding of how humans speak. It also helps the digital assistant respond more accurately to user commands. While Alaska is designed to use algorithms to improve its performance and user experience, there are also human Amazon employees involved in this process. The transcriptions are used by Amazon to help Alaska grasp some things that the company's algorithms might not cover. Alaska has problems understanding slang, foreign languages, regional expressions. Both Apple and Google also transcribe recordings of users of Siri and Google Assistant, respectively. Apple's recordings don't include information that connects them to any particular user and are used to improve Siri's voice recognition. Google has some employees listen to distorted audio from some users to help the company improve Google Assistant. These recordings also do not have information tying them to particular users. Speaking anonymously because of non-disclosure agreements they signed, the people listening in to Echo users' conversations with Alaska are both full-time Amazon employees and consultants working in teams out of offices located in places like Boston, Costa Rica, India, and Romania. Each employee puts in a 9-hour day during which he or she might listen to over 1,000 audio clips each. While doing this work is pretty routine, occasionally the listeners will hear things like someone singing in the shower off key. And if there is a word that cannot be clearly understood, an internal system allows employees, pay attention to this, to share audio files with each other. As you might imagine, sometimes the recorded conversations include something that is upsetting to those monitoring the tapes. Two workers in Romania heard the sounds of what they thought was a sexual assault. While Amazon claims to have procedures that employees need to follow when something like this pops up in a recording, the employees say they were told that Amazon should not interfere. Echo users can prevent Amazon from using recordings of their voice to develop new features, but those that choose to opt out can still have their recordings transcribed in order to improve Alaska's capabilities. And while the recordings sent to the transcribers don't have the user's full name and address, they do include the user's first name and account number and a serial number of the user's Echo device. And of course, if you have an Amazon shopping account, that's the same number and all your information is available there as well. So are you still happy with your Echo? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
You know, I grew up in the 80s. In the 80s, the big bad USSR was the right. National enemy, right?
Right.
Every bad guy on TV was always from Russia. Anytime there was something that might have gone wrong, even if it was the result of, you know, user error or miscellaneous dumbness,
right.
It was always assumed, could this have been the Russians?
Right. Now it's the NSA.
Well, yeah. And the idea of having, you know, a tapped phone line or something, you know, is this a secure line? You know, people used to say that. And now you literally have one or more wiretaps living in your house at all times.
Right. Well, you're carrying one around in your pocket right now.
Oh, that's true.
It not only lets anybody who wants to listen in, it also tells them exactly where you are.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
We don't even seem to care about that. We just do it automatically. George Orwell is spinning in his grave. We should hook him up and use him for electricity.
That'd be great.
But yes, Bob is right. Any of those home automation devices. Now, most of them can be, certainly the Alaska devices, you have a button you can turn off the mic.
Yep.
The mic. Does that work? The hell knows. Right. Your laptop has a microphone and a camera in it.
Yep.
Who's listening in? I don't know.
Well, hey, you find your local friendly nerdy friend and have them get a copy of Wireshark and have them investigate your wireless network and see what is flowing across it. What happens when you turn the mic off? What does the packet trace look like?
That's right.
When you turn the mic on and are just talking in the room, what happens then?
Right.
And if you throw the keyword out, what happens after a couple of seconds when that happens? Because it has to get the response back to you to play out the speaker again.
So many people, by the way, have turned down follow-up in their Alaska devices.
Tell me more about follow-up.
Follow-up is Google already does this. So if I say to Google, who was the 16th president of the United States? I'd come back and say Abraham Lincoln. I can then say, what was his wife's name? Without using the trigger word or anything, just what was his wife's name? And it'll come back and say Mary Todd. Because it uses context
to evaluate the pronouns.
To evaluate, right, and compares that to the previous thing.
Huh.
But the important part of that is that it's still listening after it gives the answer.
Yeah, in case it knows what you're referring to.
So, for example, if I say, to my Amazon or Google thing, how do I look today? And it says fabulous. And I say, thank you. And it says, you're welcome. That's a follow-up.
Yeah, right.
Right? It's still listening for that thank you, and then it responds with you're welcome. So that follow-up can be turned on or off in an Alexa device. Mm. Excuse me, Alaska device. But even without that, is it still listening? Possibly.
Right.
Right. I have a Google Home powered clock.
Okay.
In my bathroom. And so when I take a shower in the morning, or as yesterday in the afternoon, I'm retired.
Hey, why not? Is there such a thing as too many showers?
No. When I stepped into the shower, I had forgotten to turn on any music. So I just said to ask Google to...
Hey, Dingus. Yeah.
Hey, Dingus, play me some Mozart. And it did. But it was listening for that.
Right.
And it heard everything else I did in the bathroom. So, you know, that's simply a reality that we are living with. And Bob is right. You need to be aware of that. If you get one of these devices, then you should be aware that it is always listening. Hmm. I know a lady whose name is not Alaska.
Uh-huh. But the other one?
But the other one. And she said it's the greatest thing she's ever had, because now when her mother comes over to yell at her, it's always interrupted
it
by the device.
That's not bad.
That's my granddaughter's name.
I see a sitcom.
Yeah, there's a sitcom.
There's a Modern Family script
that would
in there
be
somewhere.
Cool, yeah.
And by the way, with most of these, you can change the trigger word.
Yes.
So if you change it to your name, it doesn't matter what your name is. You get to win in that particular scenario.
Can you think of how many dollars a company would make if they could get Majel Barrett to record responses and to have it respond to when you say computer?
Exactly.
I don't know. Do anything? I don't think the Alaska devices, the Echoes, will do that. Respond to a computer, but I could be wrong.
One of them will.
All right.
I have both, so I don't remember which one does it. But one of them you can set. To answer to
for all your Star Trek nerdy friends, they can then fire that off and get a response back. But
right,
you know, that's living in the future.
Not that far.
That is definitely living in the
definitely
future. Unfortunately,
Majel
Barrett has passed.
All right. Well, she's recorded a whole bunch of stuff. Maybe we can piece it together.
Right. They should be able to. They don't even have to do that now. They did
the
that
Chicago,
for John Legend.
Well, and the Chicago Sun Times.
Look what they did with Nicole.
The thumbs up, thumbs down. What was his name?
Ebert.
Yeah, they retook all of his recordings and made a simulated voice.
Look what they did with Nat King Cole and his daughter.
That's true.
That recording there, unforgettable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was unbelievable.
Right.
The way they mastered that in, that one takes off the other.
They laid it all together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they did that with Google. Did that with John Legend.
Okay.
You can now get celebrity voice for Google Assistant that is John Legend.
Okay. So is this like the old TomTom GPS units you'd get for your car, where you could get Hulk Hogan and Mr. T and Darth Vader to tell you which way to turn?
Right. And I don't know if he actually recorded actual answers, or if they're just simulating his voice.
Oh.
Yeah, hear Mr. T come out. Hey, fool, don't go that way.
That's exactly right. Now, I will say this. I'm going to brag a little here. Hmm. One day I got a request to follow on Twitter from Susan Bennett.
Ooh, cool.
You know who Susan Bennett is?
She's Siri.
She's
the voice of Siri.
Ooh. I have no idea why she followed me. Of course, I immediately followed her back.
Yes, ma'am.
But I have no idea what... Ellen DeGeneres follows me.
Oh, how nice.
So I followed her back. But they followed me for... I don't know why. I have no idea why.
Clearly they know who you are.
Clearly.
They know the
shockingly,
value.
Shockingly, all the invites to the Ellen show have fallen somewhere into my trash accidentally.
Well.
But, Susan Bennett follows me, and now I follow her back. God bless her. She is, or at least was, the voice of Siri.
Right.
And
it turned out she didn't know precisely what was happening.
No, she didn't.
The interviews I've seen, they were having her read words essentially out of a dictionary, and they were hoping to capture the phonemes?
Yeah.
The individual components of the words.
Phonemes.
Phonemes. Okay, thank you. So that they could reconstruct all of the other pieces needed to say whatever they needed to say. And it was really neat. And the interviews I've seen, she's actually a fairly private person.
She is.
And she didn't even know that this was going to be used in this particular way, and it was kind of surprising to her. And
yeah, she said she got a call from a friend who said, "Why didn't you tell us you were the voice of Siri?" And she said, I'm what now?
Bees are on the what now? Yeah. I don't quite follow.
She said, I didn't have an Apple phone at the time.
Right.
So I went over to my friend's house to look at her Apple phone, and it was the strangest experience.
I bet.
To hear my voice out of that phone.
Right. Saying everything that could be said.
Right. And she's a voice actor, so she knows. I mean, everybody's voice mm-hmm. sounds different in their head.
Of course.
But she knew what her voice sounded like because she's heard herself a million times.
Right. Pre-recorded.
Pre-recorded. So she knew it was her voice, and it was just, she said it was so weird.
I bet.
It was so weird.
Giving the weather and, you know, telling you that, hey, yeah. It's time to, you know, give your dog the heartworm medicine. And
well, yeah, saying things she had never said.
Right.
Right, that's the whole idea behind these deep fake videos.
Oh yeah,
where they can now put anybody's face on any video.
Right. Yeah,
and make it look so good and sound so good that you need a very high end investigator to tell it's not true.
It's true.
And sometimes they can't.
Yeah, it's everything can be doctored and in real time.
Yep, and right. In real time. It's exactly right. It's exactly right. So it's time to stop believing anything.
Yeah.
Anything.
So when you end up in court from something that got recorded on Siri or on your Alexa device, you know, you can bring up the defense of, yeah, have you heard of deep fakes?
Yep.
Everything can be faked.
Yep. That's
how do you know
true.
That was me?
How do you know that was me?
Could have been somebody else.
But yeah, it's possible to change the voices. Google recently changed all their voices to colors.
Oh,
for
okay.
some reason, I That's personally the, like cyan.
That they name them that way?
Yeah.
Okay.
But and so instead of Tom and Mary and Jane and Bill and whatever, they're now called orange and yellow and cyan and blue. And
I will read about this during the break.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, Mina Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Scott from Greece, New York, on the line. Hiya, Scott. What's up?
Yes, Nick, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to, you've probably been asked this a lot, how does one improve one's ranking on Google Business?
Okay.
What website would I go to other than, you know, I guess Google Business would show me how to do that, but is there other, websites that I can go to get some instruction on how to improve my business listing? I was on like the second page and I got bumped down to the third, and I'd like to increase my calls.
Sure, right. Sure.
Do you have a sense of what keywords your customers are using to find you, or you might start asking your existing customers, "Hey, if you found me on Google, what keywords would you use?" And then make sure that you are including those in your website or in your Google Business listing so that you can be a better match. That might be something you could do.
Right. This is called search engine optimization, or SEO. And it's what increases the visibility of your website or web page to the people who are searching for you in a search engine. Now, there are multiple search engines, but let's be honest, most people use Google. And there are a lot of people who are SEO experts.
Yes. And none of them disagree. Some of them are self-proclaimed.
Right. And none of them agree with each other.
None of them agree with each other. And the most important thing to know about SEO is that the algorithms that Google uses are evolving. They are not cast in stone. They are not, you know, carved. And because they are changing all the time, what worked this month or this year may not be what works next month or next year.
Right. And that's one reason that many people hire an SEO expert who regularly changes the way their website works, or at least what it says. There used to be something called PageRank, but Google doesn't even care about PageRank anymore. There used to be a bunch of different things that Google has changed over the years. Basically, every time somebody figures out how to game the algorithm, Google changes the algorithm.
And then the SEO experts come back and charge you more money.
That's exactly right. And I hate to say that, but it's true. Basically, what Dennis said is correct at its lowest level. What you do is figure out what words people use to search for you. And then make sure you include those words in a natural way in your website. So for
on my Google listing.
Well, right. On your Google, you're right, and on your Google, and that's the other thing. Right now, at least, right now, having a Google listing and a website that are linked, so that you are on Google's business pages, yep, and have your own website, and that the verbiage on those two pages agree, is important. And Dennis is pointing out that there are paid results and local results.
And then what they call organic results. And that's, the organic stuff is what I was talking about before. Paid results are when you hand Google a big wad of money and you say, I want to be listed as an ad, you know, up at the top of the search results beyond.
For these keywords.
For these keywords. And making sure that those keywords are things you're matching on. Also making sure that your location information is present. So when people do searches in Google Maps, they can see things, and you can be listed in those results as well. I'm confident there are probably, again, you mentioned this in your initial call, but making contact with Google themselves and having them tell you what you need. More often than not, the overall goal is get the searcher relevant information about your business in a very clean and uncluttered and organized way. And really that's Google's intent, is to be able to provide that clarity of information to the searcher. But I would say be careful with anybody who claims to be an SEO expert. That's a very easy thing to claim. And just because they've been successful, pardon me, in the past, doesn't mean that they're going to have success in the future. And kind of just understand what Google is looking for, and they themselves are going to be the best source of information for
right.
that.
I know a number of people who call themselves SEO experts, and God bless each and every one of them. There's only one guy I believe, and that's because he was actually hired by CBS to be their SEO expert.
Okay.
So him I believe.
Right. Right. And Google has tools to help you figure out keywords and figure out what that will do to help you. They have Google Ads as well. And I think, again, making contact with Google themselves is going to get you the best answers, or at least okay. have a sense of what Google says their answers are, so that when you go to talk to other people who are good at SEO, that that you have some basis of reality for their claims.
Right. There's a site called AdWords, adwords.google.com.
Okay.
Hold on. Doggone it.
Yep, and I've found a really nice article here that I'll have link. I'm sorry, we'll make a link and have Nick put that on the Soundbites page.
Right, okay.
Soundbite page? Oh, I can find that there as well.
Yep, we'll
right,
put that
right,
in
right.
Sometime after the show here.
And okay. There's a page called ads.google.com, and they have a keyword planner. where you can put in keywords that you think relate to your business. So, for example, let's say you're, well, here's an example, leather boots. You sell leather boots. You click on you type in leather boots and you click on get started, and it tells you how many average monthly searches there are for the phrase leather boots and how the competition is high, medium, low. And if you were to pay for an ad, how much it would cost you to do so. And that kind of information will tell you the sort of things people are looking for. So, for example, I typed in leather boots, but down below it says, well, 1 million people a month search for thigh-high boots. So if you sell those, maybe you should have those words in your web page and on your Google business page. See what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So those are the kinds of things that you would do. So ads.google.com and log in with your Google, with your Gmail account or whatever, and you can see what those things are, and that sends you to the keyword planner, and the keyword planner is the thing that you're most interested in.
Yeah, that's what I need, is some guidance to so I can get a better ranking.
Well, exactly right, and that's just one thing. We'll put up the thing that Dennis talked about, and also a link to Google. To ads.google.com, and that should help.
Perfect. All right. Well, guys, thank you very much for spending time on my concern.
No, it's absolutely our pleasure. Thanks.
Okay, you're welcome.
Yep. Bye-bye. Yeah, I have several friends that I'm helping. In fact, I got to get back to one of them because I've been remiss. Life got in the way. Anyway, the point here is the problem is it's no longer as easy as it used to be.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it used to be the number of links you had
inbound and the quality of those links.
And the quality of those links. Then there was your page rank, which was a whole bunch of stuff. Now it's keywords and whether you have a Google business page and 60 other things, and it's very convoluted now. It's much more difficult than it used to be.
My number one response would be, don't try to game it. I don't think you're going to have good long-term results if you attempt to game the system. Give the information that your people searching need. Give it to them as quickly and as clearly as you can. And I think Google, in general, will reward you for that.
Yes, you need to be serious and honest about it, because gaming the system is the first thing they look for.
And just because you slipped to the second page this month doesn't mean you're going to stay there.
Right.
It's all about being straight. I think Google.
The other thing, of course, to do is look at the people who are ahead of you on the page.
Sure.
What are they doing that you're not?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are their keywords? How are they putting their
right
language, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, some comparative analysis there would always
right.
make
be search good. Out your competition and just
right.
learn from them.
Right.
Especially if the ones focus on the ones that are up at the top.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Exactly right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Greece, New York. Hi, Steve. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, guys. I got in just in time. I was just surfing around the net, and I ran across an article, and I don't comment one way or the other if it's a good policy or not, but the government is thinking about trying to monitor people who get disability benefits to see if they're really disabled mm-hmm. by searching social media. Now, my question is, how would they get access to my social media if I don't friend them on Facebook, add them to my Twitter account? How would the government actually do something like that?
When you create accounts on social media, you supply a email address, you supply your chosen username, you pick a password, and you often have to tick a box next to, I agree to the terms of service for this particular company. And the terms of service are a big, long set of legalese that outlines precisely what information you will put in and what they have the right to do with it. and who they will choose to share that with. And the details about that vary from one company to the other. As you add information or photos or other things related to your life that you are electing to share with the people on that service, you also have some settings that you can set about who should receive this information. Should it be people that you have designated that you've already on Facebook, for instance, only my Facebook friends or only Facebook friends in a certain group that I've created? So, for instance, if you have things you only want to share with family on Facebook, you can restrict that. But by default, in general, Facebook is setting things so that when you post them, they are available to anybody who searches for your name on their service. So the problem is people create the account, they get excited, they get on, they pick a password, they tick the box, they don't read anything. Then they go and post a whole bunch of stuff, and they never adjust the sharing settings. And they're not super careful about what they post. And the end result of those decisions is you have an online collection of information about yourself that, for better or worse, represents what you have elected to share, and other people have direct access to that.
Okay, well, I guess that's where I couldn't believe it was possible, because I set up all those things. You only go to friends and things like that.
Yep, you are smarter than the average bear.
Mm-hmm.
If you
then they would
to
have
that.
To get a court order to actually see
no,
that.
No,
well,
no.
I'm not a lawyer.
Right. here's the reality. Mark Zuckerberg is selling everything you put on Facebook.
Yeah.
He's admitted that.
I would say don't put anything on there that you don't want printed on the front page of whatever the largest newspaper you can think of is.
Right. He's absolutely right.
Okay. I couldn't figure out how they're going to get that stuff. They didn't friend them, but you're right. Most people do sign away the...
Give away the house.
That's right. So, yeah, be careful, be vigilant, and in general, post things that aren't that racy. You know, nothing that's that exciting. And if you're doing something that you don't think you ought to be doing, perhaps bragging about it on a social media site is not the best idea.
You mean I shouldn't tell people about the bank I robbed the other day?
Exactly.
I definitely wouldn't. Yeah, post pictures of your hands with the dye pack on them.
Yeah.
Yeah, bad news. I can't recommend
color.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And definitely don't post about the bank you're going to rob next week.
Yes. All right, guys. Thank you very much. I couldn't figure out how to get it, and of course it's easier than I thought it would be.
Yeah, sure. Sorry.
Thanks for calling, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Take a look at the terms of service of Facebook and take a look at any news story.
Of anything that you've subscribed
to. Yeah, but right. That's the whole problem. It's got so many legalese and everything else that people don't take the time to do.
Right,
that.
And most of the things people publish on Facebook and Twitter are public. Therefore, anyone can get at them. That's the point of social media.
Right.
People, you see it all the time. On airlines, stewardesses who posted pictures of themselves in their lingerie lounging on the seats get fired. Teachers who were drinking in their own homes took a picture, got fired because they made that a public picture on Facebook or on Twitter or on Instagram. Instagram, by the way, is owned by Facebook, so expect the same all your base are belong to us.
And it's not just Facebook. Well. You know, it's
all of them.
It's literally everything that you sign up for. If you're not paying to use the service, and truthfully, even sometimes when you are, if you're not paying, you are the product. You plus everybody else that you know that's on that service is the product. You are the eyeballs that they are selling ads against. Your information is being used to help identify advertising that would be most beneficial for you to see or for you to experience.
Right. They sell your name to everybody. They sell your information. All your did you put your phone number in Facebook? Everybody's got it. Did you put your email address in Facebook? Everybody's got it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So on a traditional radio, TV, newspaper, you might have an ad for your local pizza place, right? Because, hey, you've got a mouth and you like to eat things. And, you know, so does everybody else who reads this newspaper or watches this television channel, right? But I, for instance, I like wristwatches, and that's a relatively narrow, much narrower than pizza, relatively narrow interest. But the Facebook people, oh, they're well aware that I like watches because all the ads that I see are for watches or things related to them or things of that nature or some of the other interests that I have that are unique to me. Now, personally, as a kid who grew up watching TV and seeing all kinds of different things for, oh, come over here and, you know, I'm 12 years old. Come over here and get your mortgage and come over here and subscribe to this credit card and come over here and go on this vacation to this far off destination. I'm looking around like, well, I'm 12 years old. I'm not doing any of that.
Right.
But as I grew up and I start to realize, hey, you know, I'm starting to not see things that I don't care about. You know, I'm starting to see the lack of ads for, you know, traveling to South America or traveling to Antarctica or you know, come here and come buy this new boat. You know, I'm not interested in boats. So right. I don't see those things, but I do see the stuff I'm interested in. And the reason that I see those, what they call targeted ads, is because I have expressed what I'm into. I've expressed my individuality in my interests, and they are leveraging that.
You can go into Facebook, for example, and buy an ad.
Sure.
And when you do that, what they say is, how much money do you want to spend?
Yeah.
How many people do you want to hit? That determines how much money you're going to spend. And what's the demographic? I want males 35 to 40 who own or have been looking for boats.
Sure.
And want a boat that goes on a small lake.
Right.
As opposed to an ocean-going cruiser.
Right. And that might be not because I want to sell them a boat. It might be because I want to sell them this fancy wristwatch, or I want to sell them these shoes.
But the point is, they can pinpoint you that directly.
Right.
They know how old you are. They know what you do. They know what you like, and they do that.
Steve brought up a big good point. The big problem is friends of friends. You may have privacy on your settings, but if you have no control over what other friends do with something you post.
Right.
That's true.
Why do you think Facebook will say, do you want to tag this person? Because they've set it this so that they don't get tagged. But guess what? Screw you.
Right. Do you want
to
override that?
I'll get your friends to tag you.
Right. Yeah. Should that be something that's overridden?
That's exactly right.
So, yeah, be very careful with what you put online and or be ready to understand what is the modern nature of these decisions that you're making.
All right. That music tells us you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense, and we're done. I want to thank everyone who called in. I particularly want to thank Dennis Worcester.
Thank you.
For taking another 2 hours, 3 hours, really, by the time you're done, out of your Saturday to come and play with us.
Always a fun.
I want to thank Steve Ray for texting in a couple of times, even though he's probably got up on a mesa somewhere and found a signal.
Yep.
I want to thank Dave Enright for staying awake for the entire show, mostly.
Yay. I did.
I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. And Michael's here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. Happy Easter tomorrow. Happy Passover yesterday. Seder late than never. And we'll be back in just 166 hours.